Chapter 9. He lay in the darkness, too stunned to weep. Even in his sudden blind shock, Azoth knew that Rats Biggs couldn't be asleep. This was what they had been waiting for. Azoth had left for the barest minute, and they had taken Doll Girl. It wouldn't even do him any good to wake the whole guild. In the darkness and confusion, he'd never know just which of Rats Biggs was gone. And what would he do even if he knew? Even if he knew who was gone, he wouldn't know where they'd gone. Even if he knew where they'd gone, what would he do? He lay in the darkness, stumbling over thoughts, staring at the sagging ceiling. He'd heard them. Damn him forever. He'd heard the sound and didn't even go look. He lay in the darkness. Finished. The watch changed. The sun rose. The guild rats stirred, and he stared at the sagging ceiling, waiting for it to collapse on him like everything else. He couldn't have moved, even if he wanted to. He lay in the light. Children were shrieking, littles pulling at him, shouting something about Badger. Questions. It was all words. Words were wind. Someone shook him, but he was far away. It wasn't until long after that he woke. There was only one sound that could have brought him out of his trance. Rat. Laughing. Tingles shot across his skin, and he sat upright. He still had the shiv. There was dried blood on the floor, but Azoth barely saw it. He stood and started walking toward the door. That terrible laugh rang out again, and Azoth ran. The moment he stepped through the door, out of the corner of his eye he saw the shadow of the doorframe elongate and snap forward. It was as fast as a trapdoor spider he'd once seen, and just as effective. He slammed into the shadow like he'd run into a wall. His head rang as he was pulled back into the deep shadows between the guild building and the ruin next to it. "So eager for death, little one?" Azoth couldn't shake his head, couldn't shake loose. The shadow had a hand like iron over his face. Slowly, he realized it was Master Blint. "5 days, kid. 5 days you had to kill him." He was whispering in Azoth's ear, the faintest hint of garlic and onions laced through his breath. In front of them, Rat was talking with the guild, laughing and making them laugh with him. Some of Azoth's lizards were there, laughing too, hoping to escape Rat's notice. So it begins already. Whatever Azoth had accomplished was already coming apart. The rest of the lizards were gone. Doubtless they'd come crawling back later to see what had happened. Azoth couldn't even be mad at them for it. In the Warrens, you did what you had to survive. It wasn't their failure, it was his. Blint was right. The Biggs on either side of Rat were ready. Rat himself was ready. If Azoth had charged out there, he would have died, or worse. All the time he'd had to plan, and he'd done nothing. He would have deserved that death.
"Calm now, kid," Blint asked. "Good. Because I'm going to show you what your hesitation cost."
Solon was ushered into dinner by an old man with a stooped back and a smartly pressed uniform adorned with gold braid and the gyre's soaring white falcon on a field sable, which over the centuries had become barely recognizable as the gerfalcon it was. A northern falcon, and not Caladoran, or even Lodrakari. Gerfalcons were only found in the frieze, so the gyres are hardly more native to Cenaria than I am. Dinner was set in the Great Hall, a strange choice to Solon's mind. It wasn't that the Great Hall wasn't impressive, it was too much so. It must have been almost as large as Castle Cenaria's own Great Hall, adorned with tapestries, banners, shields of long-dead enemies, enormous canvases, statuary in marble and gold leaf, and a ceiling mural depicting a scene from the Alcestia. In the midst of such grandeur, the table was dwarfed to insignificance, though it was 15 paces long.
"Lord Solon Tophusen of House Tophusen, Windseekers of Royal House Bryden in the Island Empire of Seth," the old man announced.
Solon was pleased that the man had either known or dug up the appropriate titles, even if Seth was scarcely an empire these days. Solon walked forward to greet Lady Gyre. She was an attractive woman, stately, with the dark green eyes and the dusky skin and delicate bones of the House Grayson. Though she had an admirable figure, she dressed modestly by Cenarian standards, the neckline high, the hemline coming down almost to her slim ankles, the gray gown fitted, but not tight.
"Blessings, milady," Solon said, giving the traditional Sethi open-palmed bow. "May the sun smile upon you, and all storms find you in port."
It was a little much, but so was having three people dine in a hall large enough to have its own weather. She humphed, not even bothering to speak to him. They sat, and servants brought out the first course, a mandarin duck soup with fennel.
"My son warned me of what you were, but you speak quite well. Nor have you seen fit to put metal through your face.
And you're wearing clothes. I'm quite pleased." Evidently, the good Duchess had heard about her son's luck with sparring Solon, and didn't appreciate having her son humbled.
"Is it true, then?"
Logan asked. He was at one end of the table, his mother at the other, and Solon, unfortunately, in the middle.
"Do the Sethi really go naked on their ships?"
"Logan," Katrina Gyre said sharply.
"No, if I may, Lady Gyre, that's a common misperception. Our island splits the hottest current in the Great Sea, so it's quite warm there even in the winter. In the summer, it's nearly intolerable. So, though we don't wear as much clothing or as heavy clothing as people do here, we aren't without our own standards of modesty."
"Modesty? You call women who run about on boats half-naked modest?" Lady Gyre asked. Logan looked enrapt by the idea.
"Not all of them are modest, of course. But to us, breasts are about as erotic as necks. It might be pleasant to kiss them, but there's no reason to..."
"You go too far," Lady Gyre said.
"On the other hand, a woman who shows her ankles is obviously hoping not to go below decks alone. Indeed, Lady Gyre..."
He lifted an eyebrow and pretended to look at her ankles, though they were too far away and on the other side of table legs. "Sethi women would think you quite brazen." Katrina Gyre's face went ashen. Before she could say anything, though, Logan laughed.
"Ankles? Ankles? That's so dumb."
He wolf whistled.
"Nice ankles, mother."
He laughed again. A servant arrived with the second course, but Solon didn't even see him set it down.
"Why do I do this?"
It wouldn't be the first time his sharp tongue had cut his own throat.
"I see that your lack of respect isn't confined to striking Lord Gyre," the Duchess said.
"Now he's Lord Gyre." "So the men weren't stupid. They were babying Logan. She's probably ordered them not to hit Logan in practice."
"Mother, he was never disrespectful to me, and he didn't mean to disrespect you either."
Logan looked from his mother to Solon and found stony gazes on each.
"Did you, Lord Tophusen?"
"Milady," Solon said. "My father once told me that there are no lords on the practice field because there are no lords on the battlefield."
"Nonsense," she said. "A true lord is always a lord. In Cenaria, we understand this."
"Mother, he means that enemy swords cut nobles as surely as they cut peasants."
Lady Gyre ignored her son and said,
"What is it that you want from us, Master Tophusen?" It was a rude thing to ask a guest, and not least for addressing him as a commoner. Solon had been counting on the Gyre's courtesy to give him long enough to figure out that very thing. He had thought that he could watch and wait, dine with the Gyres at every meal, and be afforded a fortnight or two before he announced any intention of his plans. He thought he might like the boy, but this woman, gods! He might be better off with the Jadwin seductress.
Mother, don't you think you're being a little...
She didn't even look at her son. She just raised her palm toward him and stared at Solon, unblinking.
So, that's how it is.
Logan wasn't just her son. For all that he was only a boy, Logan was Katrina Gyre's lord. In that contemptuous gesture, Solon read the family's history. She raised her hand, and her son was still young enough, still inexperienced enough, that he went silent like a good son, rather than punished her like a good lord. In that contempt, and the contempt she'd greeted him with, Solon saw why Duke Gyre had named his son Lord Gyre in his own absence. The Duke couldn't trust his own wife to rule. "I'm waiting," Lady Gyre said. The chill in her voice made his decision. Solon didn't like children, but he loathed tyrants.
"Damn you, Dorian."
"I've come here to be Lord Gyre's advisor," he said, smiling warmly.
"Ha! Absolutely not."
"Mother," Logan said, a touch of steel entering his voice.
"No, never,"
she said. "In fact, Master Tophusen, I'd like you to leave."
"Mother?"
"Immediately," she said. Solon didn't move. Merely held his knife and two-pronged fork, he was glad he remembered how the Cenarians used the things, over his plate, willing himself not to move.
"When are you going to let Lord Gyre act like Lord Gyre?" he asked her.
"When he's ready, when he's older, and I will not be questioned by some Sethi savage who..."
"Is that what the Duke commanded you when he named his son Lord in his absence? Let Logan be Lord once he's ready? My father once told me that delayed obedience is really disobedience."
"Guards!" she called.
"Damn it, Mother, stop it!"
Logan stood so abruptly his chair clattered to the ground behind him. The guards were halfway to Solon's chair. They suddenly looked caught, conspicuous. They looked at each other and slowed, vainly tried to approach quietly, their chainmail jingling with every step.
"Logan, we'll speak about this later,"
Katrina Gyre said.
"Talon, Bran, escort this man out, now."
"I am the Gyre! Don't touch him!" Logan shouted.
The guards stopped. Katrina's eyes flashed fury.
"How dare you question my authority? You second-guess your mother in front of a stranger? You're an embarrassment, Logan Gyre. You shame your family. Your father made a terrible mistake in trusting you."
Solon felt sick. Logan looked worse. He was shaken, suddenly wavering, about to fold. The snake. She destroys what she should protect. She shatters her own son's confidence. Logan looked at Talon and Bran. The man looked wretched to be so visibly witnessing Logan's humiliation. Logan shrank, seemed to deflate.
"I have to do something."
"My Lord Gyre," Solon said, standing and drawing all eyes. "I'm terribly sorry. I don't wish to impose on your hospitality. The last thing I would wish is to be an occasion for strife in your family, and indeed, I forgot myself and spoke too frankly to your mother. I'm not always attuned to tempering the truth for Cenarian sensibilities. Lady Gyre, I apologize for any offense you or your lord may have taken. Lord Gyre, I apologize if you felt I treated you lightly, and will of course take my leave, if you will grant it."
a little twist on the "if you will grant it." Logan stood straighter.
"I will not."
"My lord?" Solon painted puzzlement on his face.
"I found too much tempering and not enough truth in this house, Lord Tofusen," Logan said. "You've done nothing to offend me. I'd like you to stay. And I'm sure my mother will do all she can to make you feel welcome."
"Logan Gyre, you will not!"
Katrina Gyre said.
"Men," Logan said to the guards, loudly, to cut her off. "Lady Gyre is tired and overwrought. Escort her to her chambers. I'd appreciate it if one of you would watch her door this night in case she requires anything. We will all dine in the usual room in the morning."
Solon loved it. Logan had just confined his mother to her chambers and put a guard on the door to keep her there until morning, all without giving her an avenue for complaint.
"This boy will be formidable."
"Will be?
He already is. And I've just chained myself to him." It wasn't a comfortable thought. He hadn't even decided to stay. Actually, half an hour ago, he'd decided not to decide for a few weeks. Now, he was Logan's.
"Did you know this would happen, Dorian?"
Dorian didn't believe in coincidences, but Solon had never had his friend's faith. Now, faith or no faith, he was committed. It made his neck feel tight, like wearing a slave collar two sizes too small. The rest of an excellent meal passed in silence. Solon begged his lord's leave and went looking for the nearest inn that served Sethi wine.